This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Back here on the morning shift in our 8 o'clock hour, it is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. If you are listening to us wherever you are, you always have the Odyssey app, so you can give us a call right now, 404-726-0929, because it is time for the wake-up call.
I used to be in charge of the music in a high school weight room, and this song was one of the most requested every single day.
It's so accurate.
And it, I don't even know what she's even talking about in the song. I don't know
exactly
or not.
Why are men great until they have to be great? Just think about it.
I don't understand.
But the thought of men, it's great. But then when they have to step up and rise to the occasion for whatever that is.
So the greatness before you needed
greatness.
Something wasn't good enough? Is that what you're trying to say?
No. That's... like the thought of men, men in general are great. Men are great. I love men. But... and that is the point of the song. That is the point of the song.
I didn't know that Steve Kerr was 6'3".
You didn't know that? What did you think he was?
Well, like
thought
5'11".
He was 5'8".
Yeah, he's like
5'8" and a half.
I always thought he was like the Spud Webb of the Bulls that he could shoot.
No.
Have you seen the video of Spud Webb meeting Victor Wembanyama?
Yeah, it's
that's so good. Like his neck is legitimately looking at the ceiling.
It's kind of like that time that Aaron Judge was standing on second base and Jose Altuve
yes.
was standing next
yes.
to him. And it's like,
yeah.
That also reminds me of the time, by the way,
ding,
when we were talking about the Tony Gonzalez conversation back in 2013. You know who the tight end was on that team? It was Levine Tololo.
Oh, good call.
And Chase Kaufman. It's like that time
Chase was a.
How many years was Tololo here?
We got probably about four.
Yeah, I think he made his rookie deal.
We got off the bus one time at a game, and we're walking in, and you know how like sometimes a TV they'll have the camera guy walking backwards. You know, like I'm moving away from the microphone.
Yeah.
They're like walking backwards, like getting the shot of you guys walking in. I was like, why is the camera on us?
Yeah.
And then I look to my left, like out of the corner of my eye, and it's like Levine, and I was like, oh. Come on, man.
So it's like Spud Webb and Victor Wembanyama. Like, I mean, it was essentially what was going on, is what you're trying to say.
Well, yeah, but I'm also Spud Webb size, and I guess Levine is not 7'2".
Yeah.
Or 7'4", whatever Wembanyama is.
He's a lanky, tall dude.
Yeah, he's a big dude. I was like, man, come on. Why is everything going to try to make me look bad? Like, this is the worst.
Why can't I be walking next to
Matt Bryant?
Huh? I don't know if it's try. Sometimes it's just,
like, why can't me and Matt Bryant be walking in together?
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know?
Matt Bosher.
Yeah, Matt Bosher's, I think, 6'1", but he's still.
Josh Harris.
It's a respectable difference in height is what you're saying.
I will say Chase Kaufman. Yeah. I had forgot about Chase Kaufman for a minute. Chase Kaufman, when he was in college at Mizzou, was an absolute Jesse of a tight end.
Okay, who was the best athlete that no one would that like? I know probably the best athlete you ever played with is Julio Jones, because I think he's one of the best athletes all around.
Yes,
but the best athlete you ever played with wasn't like a star player.
Yeah, I got first of all, the second best athlete I ever played with was Brent Grimes. Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Like I remember during the lockout, he would run towards a flight of stairs and jump up to the ninth step. Like just bound up to the ninth step. It was crazy. But a sleeper
what was
pick,
his standing high jump.
I don't know. Sleeper pick, Terrence Cody. I watched Terrence Cody at about 350 pounds dunk a basketball, and it's still one of the most insane things
really?
That I ever witnessed. I like windmill dunk, not like barely get it over. I'm talking about like tomahawk dunk at like 350 in combine training.
Wasn't he only 6'2"?
Yeah, 6'2", 6'3", yeah.
Well, I mean, what my point was, it's not like he was 6'6", like 350 pounds. He was 6'2". He was a big dude.
He was
but,
a massive person.
You know, that 3 or 4 inches gets you closer to the goal.
To watch a guy that weighs 350 with a belly like that get up and knock down like a hammer dunk was one of the most insane things I've ever seen.
That's incredible. We used to have I cannot remember this guy's name, but he transferred to our high school. And he was in the same grade, and he was a really good athlete, but he never played sports at our school because like he was only there for a short time. And
I thought you were gonna say not eligible.
He used to do the he would be wearing a book bag with books in it, and he would just dunk.
It's crazy.
And I was like,
nuts.
And you imagine me, you know, I'm like, man, I can touch the net.
Yeah, I was gonna say here I am at 3'10", and I'm going, and I'm taller, and I'm 3'10", and I'm sitting there going, let me see if I can grab that rim.
Yeah, like yeah, get in the rim.
Throwing one down like he's, you know, LeBron or something. Like, and I'm like, Jesus.
You can also tweet at us on X if you like to do that too. We had Major Wingate. I don't know if you remember that name. They went to North Gwinnett basketball.
Yeah, that sounds really familiar.
And then he went on to play at Tennessee for a little bit. But yeah, that was like our tallest guy on the basketball team, I think, back then.
Yeah, I just think it's cool because everybody's got like an athlete, high school, college, you know, if you made it to the pros, that you played with that was a phenomenal athlete. And it's not like, I don't know, everybody can say, if you ask, like, you know, Algie Crumpler is obviously hashtag Squid Nation. He's one of my favorite people I've ever been around. And
good dude.
And, you know, I could say, hey, who's the best athlete you've ever played with? And the only answer is Mike Vick. I mean, Mike Vick, to me, I think Michael Vick is one of the three greatest athletes to ever play in the NFL. I think he's that's how athletic to me, that's how gifted that guy was. But that's an easy answer. I want to know the guy that didn't, you know, that wasn't a huge name. Because
insane.
I think when you bring up Chase Kaufman, it hit me because Chase Kaufman, you say, oh, he's a beast. But you would never think that. The average person out there would never think Chase Kaufman was just ridiculous.
Yeah. And again, we had this conversation last week with Steak and Rusty about like pro days and things like that. Some of those guys, I had a friend from back home named Brandon Condren who went to Troy. You need to look up Brandon Condren's pro day numbers. It's insane. Like he was a safety, I think, at Troy. He would have led like every combine category or something had he gone to the combine. It's nuts, man. There's guys like that all over the place that are just athletically insane when it comes to some of the things they're able to do, you know, that you don't expect.
Major Wingate played at Tennessee in college, like you said, Tiff. He played overseas for quite a while as well. So to answer that, he was from Florence, South Carolina. So that's
yeah.
Yeah, I remember when you got through school. It was a big deal back then.
Interesting.
Hey, let's go to the lines. We got Big Money waiting on us. Good morning, Big Money.
Big Money!
Good morning.
What's up, man?
Hey, I'm a first-time caller into the morning shift, and I would like to declare my loyalty to Mike's Mafia.
Let's go! It's about to... Welcome, sir. Welcome. Appreciate you. Happy to have you.
I want to go ahead and give a wake-up call ahead of the draft to Tyrann Fontenot because I know we're about to go in here and draft a wide receiver in the first round.
Don't do it. Don't put it out there.
I just had to do it, y'all. I'm just prepared to have my feelings hurt.
Hey, Big Money, what do you want him? What do you want him to draft? What do you want? What position?
I'm either good with the linebacker from Alabama or somebody who can not just affect the passer and get them off the spot, but somebody who can get the ball back for the offense on fourth down. That's all I want. I don't care what position it comes from, or you get the best playmaking safety that can go out there and compliment Jesse Bates. I mean, we have so many needs, so you can't just really put all your eggs in one basket and think that we draft a pass rusher, we're automatically getting Von Miller for the next 10 years. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
You know, we have too many needs to fill. So, I mean, what do you think? Like, I mean, I've heard you all over the past couple of weeks, you know, we have so many needs on this team, and I just want to have a pass rush, man, that we can just get. I just want to have a pass rush.
Yeah.
We're so bad.
Great call.
And we had those spurts, when we were good last year, but we need consistency. I mean, am I tripping, guys?
No, you're not. It's like
phenomenal
I said.
Phenomenal call, though. It's best call we've had in months.
It's what that's because the first call from Mike's mom we had in months.
Don't worry
about that. I would tell you, Big Money, appreciate you calling for the first time. I hate where that you made the wrong choice with your allegiance, but it's what I said. It's something I said earlier. We're the Cleveland Browns of edge rushers. They have not had a quarterback. Literally, they had Baker, but they didn't know how to. They just screwed that up. But they've got all these quarterbacks that are supposed to be the guy, and none of them have panned out. We've had all these guys that we thought were going to be the edge rusher since the Predator, one of my favorite Falcons of all time, John Abraham, left, and none of them have panned out. None of them have worked.
Are you confident that we're not that team when it comes to just defensive line, period? Are you confident? I know Grady Jarrett was a fifth rounder, but that's been 10 years ago.
No, I'm not. I think we are that team when it was defensive line.
You said
line.
Edge rusher. I'm just making sure because,
edge rusher is what everyone focuses on.
Right.
Just like
for very obvious reasons, just like they do with Cleveland. But it's one of the reasons I look at it. Everything he just said is one of the reasons I've started leaning towards Walter Nolan. I'm not in love with any of the edge prospects. I think they'll all have good careers, but there's conversations about every single one of them that you're like, like Mike Green, great edge rusher, did disappear against some of the better competition. Shamar Stewart, there's questions about his output. Every single one of them, though, it's like you have a question about. To me, Walter Nolan, from top to bottom, I'm looking at going, he can affect all three downs. You need help in run and pass. I know that everybody focuses on pass, but if you can't get him in third and long, it ain't going to matter if you can get home rushing
the pass. Is it fair to say that Walter Nolan, the way you perceive him right now, is the Abdul Carter in this draft? Abdul Carter is the head and shoulders best defensive edge rusher out there in this draft. I'm not sure who the best defensive interior lineman is behind Walter Nolan.
Well, I think a lot of people, it's the Michigan kid.
Mason Graham.
Graham.
Yeah, that would probably be it.
A lot of people view him. There's also the Oregon guy.
I'm not either. The Oregon.
Got to dig into him a little bit further.
Well, but you know what? I'm going to. The jury is out for me before I'll ever draft another Oregon interior or defensive lineman right now, because the jury is out on the defensive lineman from Oregon.
I will say, for some reason or another, for better or worse, I tend to lean more towards like five-star recruits because of what I perceive their natural ability to be, inside or outside of a scheme, inside or outside of their setting, their worth ethic, their coaching, whatever it is. Sometimes when you look at a guy like Walter Nolan, who's been at two top-flight programs and was a top-flight recruit, I'm like, hey, I'll take that guy because I think that there's just more a higher likelihood that they fit whatever you want to do with them.
I like the when Aaron Donald hit him up at the combine. I don't know if you guys saw this. He's doing his sideline report after his workout.
Yeah.
And the reporter had a message from Aaron Donald, and Aaron Donald talked to him at that point. I thought it was really cool.
I didn't see that. Message.
Cause
check that out.
Because Walter Nolan says he's the Aaron Donald of this draft. If he is.
Wow.
I will fight everyone on the street for him. Let's go.
Okay. Well, when we come back here on the morning shift, we've got NFL insider from The Athletic, Jeff Howe, joining us here. Stay with us as we dive into the NFL next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 929 The Game. We are going straight to the WadeFord.com hotline. That is where we find NFL insider for The Athletic, Jeff Howe, joining us. Good morning, Jeff. Jeff, you with us?
Maybe Jeff is jamming out to a little Limp Bizkit because it's my way.
No, right? I was like, man, this guy, Jeff is definitely special to us if we're bringing him in with Limp Bizkit.
Now, Jeff, sir, how you doing today, Jeff?
Hey, I'm great. You're right. You caught me.
You're jamming out. I knew I was over here. I was singing the lyrics.
I thought it was my headphones.
Sometimes you just get lost in the melody.
Good to have you with us, Jeff. So I guess we could get to a lot of the news that's breaking around the NFL with the Jets. So Devontae Adams, Aaron Rodgers, both on the outs of that organization. Where do you think Devontae Adams ends up going? Is it going to be wherever Aaron Rodgers lands?
Well, I think it's natural to want to connect the two, but you look at this crop of receivers that Devontae Adams is joining in free agency. I mean, basically the next six, are either 30-plus or coming off a major injury, and you're going to have a lot of – like T. Higgins getting tagged really changed the dynamic. Not that was unforeseeable, but it really changed the dynamic of the wide receiver market. So you've got teams like the Patriots and Raiders and Giants who are rebuilding and have cap space, certainly the Patriots and Raiders more than just about anybody, and wanted to go all in on a receiver this offseason. And now it's like, all right, well, how much realistically are you going to spend on somebody who's 30-plus when you're in the middle of a rebuild? And then conversely, how much is that guy like a Devontae Adams going to want to join a rebuild? So I think you're going to see a lot of these guys get like maybe one, maybe two years of guaranteed money on these contracts. And that's going to reduce the desire or the pool of desirable candidates of teams that these players are looking at. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see sort of like that Chiefs blueprint where you're going to get a contender who's going to be able to sign a Stephon Diggs, Devontae Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, and so on to a reasonable deal, because these guys at this stage of their career are going to start prioritizing rings.
Jeff, let's stay on that same trajectory. Let's talk about veteran quarterbacks. And Tiff just brought up Aaron Rodgers a minute ago. I think we've got our eyes in Atlanta peeled on at least the market because of Kirk Cousins being out there. There's been a lot of talk. I mean, Stafford was a hot name for a minute, and then he wasn't. And you just wonder where some of these guys are going to end up. Talk to me a little bit about the veteran kind of free agent market and where you could see some of these musical chairs panning out.
Well, that's not ideal either. This is it's not an ideal offseason for teams that need a lot of crucial positions. And I think you saw a lot of that yesterday with only two guys getting tagged. I think that's just foreshadowing of the desirable candidates that are going to hit free agency. But you talk about quarterback. I mean, for basically, 17 weeks of the season, it looked like Sam Darnold was cruising toward a contract worth about $45 million annually, somewhere in that neighborhood. And then it all came crashing down. Now, the Minnesota offensive line didn't do him a lot of favors in those last two losses. But now you've got to wonder how much Sam Darnold's really going to command. Is he going to get a contract worth anything more than 2 years guaranteed? I mean, he'll get like a four-year deal somewhere. But just talking practical money, I don't know if teams are going to be rushing to kind of go after him when you have a more affordable option. Of course, the headaches come with Aaron Rodgers, but you could talk about Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins, if he gets released, assuming he gets released. The attractiveness to Cousins, too, is a team, let's say the Browns, wants to bring in Cousins. I mean, you're basically on the hook for $1.2 million because Atlanta's going to pay out the balance of that guaranteed money. It's tough to predict where these guys are going to wind up because the priorities with these candidates, they lie in such different directions. I mean, you look at the Raiders and say, all right, it's natural to connect Pete Carroll to Russell Wilson. And then you look at Tom Brady newly in the front office. What's his appetite going to be for substandard quarterback play? I can't imagine it's going to be overly high. But the options out there aren't great. Like, there's not that one or two guys to headline this free agent class and say, okay, that's the guy, that's what they can go after, even if it costs extra money. Same with the draft class. Like, Cam Ward is certainly starting to distinguish himself as the top guy, more so than even a month ago. But Tennessee's in the driver's seat. And is Tennessee all in on him? And we've spent so much time focusing on what are the Giants and the Raiders going to do at quarterback. It's not really their call right now. It's Tennessee's call. And then from there, I mean, how much do you really love Shedeur Sanders? Is Jackson Dart really worth taking as high as, let's say, 3 or 7? So it's just there. And then, you know, the hidden element here, too, is the 26 draft class is supposed to be really good, assuming at least some of those guys declare. So if you take a guy high in this year's class and whiff, how are you going to be able to, is ownership going to afford you the ability to come back in 26 and take a player there? So, you know, you talk about the musical chairs. Trust me, I've been spinning them around in my head for months, and it's done nothing but give me a headache.
Excellent NFL writer for The Athletic, Jeff Howell, joins us. Also,
Limp Bizkit fan.
Yeah, brother in arms of Limp Bizkit fans. I'm just glad you're lost in the melody and not in Fred Durst's eyes, because that'd be scary. Jeff, look, Trey Hendrickson is a guy who has said he wants to be paid. They're paying T. Higgins with the franchise tag, and hopefully they hope to get a deal done. Joe Burrow's getting paid. They got to pay Ja'Marr Chase. Trey wants a new deal. Can they afford to pay him? I know they have upwards of like $58 million if you count the rookie class signings. Can they pay him? And if not, what does that trade look like if they were to deal him?
And you want to talk about giving myself a headache. I'm trying to go through these Cincinnati scenarios too, and that was sort of like the biggest question of the week at the Combine, just in terms of overall question, like what is this team doing? What are the Bengals doing? When it started to look like they were going to franchise T. Higgins, it's like, what are you guys doing? I mean, this is an organization that until the Burrow deal, which was a layup, you had to do that. They didn't necessarily give out those huge, big money contracts to stars. And now you have $55 million per year in Burrow. Eventually, when you get to Ja'Marr Chase, it's going to be between $35 and $40 per year. It could be even higher if they continue to wait or if they play the tag game. And then Higgins, he's coming in at, what, 26, 27, I forget the figure. But if they get a long-term extension done, which I'm skeptical is going to happen, you know, that's going to come in at 30-plus. Last year, there were two teams, the Dolphins and the Eagles, who had two wide receivers who were on contracts making 25-plus average annual value. Now, clearly it worked out very well for the Eagles, but they're the exception. And really, they're the exception when it comes to this in general. But the Dolphins, that hasn't worked out for them. Then you look at there's four other teams that had two receivers who made 20-plus million in average annual value. Those teams combined to win one playoff game. So aside from the Eagles, again, you're talking about five teams at 20-plus with one playoff victory. It's not a sustainable formula of success. And now you want to talk about Cincinnati. If you get these deals done the way that you're proclaiming you're going to, which, again, there's a lot of skepticism that'll happen, you're talking about two wide receivers who are going to be making 30-plus, including quite likely the highest-paid wide receiver in NFL history, on top of a $55 million quarterback, who's worth it, of course. And then now you want to spin it down to Trey Hendrickson, and what's he going to get? Like, there's just not enough money to go around. You just fired your defensive coordinator because you didn't draft well enough to supplement the defensive replacements that you needed because you knew you were going to invest so heavily in the offensive skill positions. The offensive line that you've been trying to fix for years was a culprit in a second consecutive missed playoff season. You know, you just had a dream season out of Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. T. Higgins just had a career high in touchdowns, and you missed the playoffs because you've got holes elsewhere, and now you want to set up your roster financially in an unprecedented way and hope that things magically change. It's just not a formula that is predictable to success.
Well, Jeff, let's talk about the NFL's highest paid running back now, and that would be Saquon Barkley. So I, for one, am very happy to see the resurgence of the running back and them getting the respect they deserve. But what does what Barkley did last year, him getting paid now, what does it do for some of the guys in the draft, like, say, an Ashton Jeanty?
Well, it's interesting. It's an interesting time, different sort of from last year. Now, last year I never really bought into the contractual resurgence at the running back market because – the top tier basically went from $15 to $16 million down to like 12 to 13. There's still the McCaffrey exception, but then you look at what happened to McCaffrey, and that gave executives pause for, well, yeah, I mean, he was the best running back on the planet for like, what, 3 years or something like that, and then basically couldn't produce despite the contract and despite minimal warning signs that this thing was about to go downhill as quickly as possible. But what it did do was it bumped up sort of the middle class of the running back. You got a lot more in that 8 to 12 million per year market. And I think that kind of leveled out to an extent. But then you look at the draft class this year, and I could see it both ways because there's so much attention on Jeanty and where he could go, and he could certainly be a top 10 pick. And there's not going to be a lot of argument. He's still one of the five most talented overall prospects. It's just he's going to get hurt by the positional value debate. What Barkley just did is unique. I don't think anybody can sit here and say, all right, well, Barkley just got a deal at in excess of $20 million per year with the way these new numbers have kind of changed the dynamics of that contract. I don't think you're going to be able to see guys like whatever Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, or what have you start to bring that number closer to 20. I don't think. You know, I could be wrong with the rising cap dynamics. That certainly things are going to increase to an extent. I don't know how much. But shifting focus to the draft, it's not just Jeanty, which is sort of interesting. And I don't know if that'll help or hurt him, but I certainly think it's fascinating. Like, it's a really deep class of running backs. And you can say that sort of generally just about every year. Like, you're always going to find guys in the fifth, sixth, seventh round who are going to come in and start, maybe make a Pro Bowl, certainly make some noise. But this year, you look at the class and the speed, the athleticism, the explosion. I mean, you look at the way Ohio State managed those running backs. You look at Texas. There's just been a different type of athlete coming out, and it's a really exciting year for the running back draft. So, but again, like, I could see it one of two ways. You could look at Jeanty, and if you've got a team, let's say in the top 12 to 15 picks, decides that they can really get, you know, let's say 1,500 yards from scrimmage out of him year after year after year, you know, that'd be a good pick for them. You could also look at that and say, well, there's going to be some really good running backs in round two and round three and round four that I could wait on. So I think that's a pretty fascinating element going into the draft.
Jeff, got about a minute left. Are the NFL circles and the combine and the Senior Bowl, are the Falcons expected to be aggressive in free agency this offseason?
I'm not going to blow smoke. I didn't hear them come up a whole lot. I mean, I think this they were a hot topic toward the end of the season because of the Kirk Cousins, Michael Penix stuff, just in terms of the people I'm talking to. You know, can't talk to everybody. Like, maybe I talked to the wrong pocket of people. but they were a bigger topic of conversation toward the end of the season than they were. But, like, there just weren't a lot of Falcon-centric storylines that I was focused on last week, to be fair. So, again, I'm not going to lie to you and be like, oh, my goodness, guys, get ready for next week. It's going to be crazy. I mean, it could be. It just wasn't on my radar, so I apologize.
Oh, you don't want to tease us.
I wish you'd lie to me.
No. Darn it, Jeff. No, just kidding. We appreciate all the great insight you just gave to us and for coming on with us this morning, Jeff.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys. Have a great week.
You too. That was NFL Insider for The Athletic, Jeff Howe, joining us. You can follow him on X at Jeff P. Howe. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing up. Next, we have a Life of Squid.
Yeah, one team's got rid of their star player, and now they're going to raise ticket prices?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's not real, is it? We'll tell you next. Morning Shift, Sports Radio 929 The Game, and
the Odyssey app.
We are back here just rolling along on the morning shift.
Yeah, this segment brought to you by Buffalo's Cafe. Come wing it family style at one of Buffalo's Cafe's 13 Atlanta locations.
Hey, do you ever watch a movie that you've seen 1,000 times and not realize that someone in the movie is a major character in one of your favorite TV shows or one of your favorite TV shows of the past?
Yeah, this happened not too long ago with me. There was somebody that was... Oh, man, who was that? There was somebody, and I was like, what? That person's in that show? And I had to look up, like, their, what is it? Not discography.
IMDb. Or,
yeah, the International Movie Database and check out their filmography.
I never
for whoever it was.
You guys are familiar with the movie Shawshank Redemption.
Yes. Yeah.
It was on yesterday, and I can't remember what I was doing, but it was something where I was not going to be around for long, and I was like, I just had the TV on. I was like, I'll just put on this kind of good background noise, right? Maybe it was waiting for Dylan to call us for the show car or whatever, but there's one of the inmates that's kind of a part of Andy Dufresne's group, you know, him and Red, and there's a couple of guys. One of them was the name of the character was Snooze, but he's just one of the guys that sits at the table with them when they're eating. And I go, wait a second. That's Richie Aprile from The Sopranos. And I was like, no, there's no way. And he was one of the, for one season, there was a character called Richie Aprile who was the guy that got out of jail and came back to the family and kind of caused trouble for Tony and ended up dating Tony Soprano's sister. I never put two and two together. Like, I've watched that show, I think, twice all the way through, and I've watched Shawshank Redemption probably like 60 times and never put one and one together to make that was like never.
Same guy.
Yeah, until yesterday.
Yeah, I had I think I remember what my situation was. What's the girl's name who does Chelsea lately? What's her last name?
Chelsea Handler?
Chelsea Handler. She's dating a guy that was on Schindler's List. And I was like, man, where have I seen that guy's face before? And sure enough, he's like on Schindler's List. And I was like, what are the odds that Chelsea lately is dating the guy from Schindler's List?
That's a movie I've never seen all the way through. Ralph Fiennes?
Yeah, Ralph Fiennes. Yeah.
Ralph Fiennes
yeah.
is his name.
Yeah, that's exactly who I'm talking about.
Hey,
and
I
was like,
Ralph
what?
Fiennes,
I was like looking at his face going, I know that guy.
He's
been in a couple big movies.
He was in Red Dragon.
I thought it was Rafe Fiennes. Is it
I think
Ralph?
It's Ralph. Yeah, I think it's Ralph.
Are we talking about there might be two different people that we're talking about.
F-I-E-N-N-E-S.
It's spelled Ralph.
Ralph, yeah.
I know, I thought
he
said
is dating Chelsea
differently.
Handler.
Yeah. I didn't know they were dating.
Yeah.
Let's see. He's
I'm just plugged into the entertainment
actor.
I mean, clearly. I follow Chelsea.
I don't know if you guys know me or not, but when it comes to E and all things like that, I'm pretty plugged in.
Well, maybe it's
going to Mike for Entertainment Source.
Check that out.
Entertainment segment.
Maybe it's
Us Weekly, those kind of things.
Rife.
Yeah,
Fiennes.
It's pronounced. Yeah, it's not.
Well, that's stupid. Why would you spell it like Ralph?
Maybe he's not. Where's. Well, look at
He's English. Why? They ain't different than us. Well, we took their language.
Oh, my God.
What?
Every day.
What did I say now?
I can't. That's all I got. I can't. Look, what I can do is tell you about the Braves.
Can you?
So, tell me.
Yes.
Tell me.
Can I? I know. Can I really? Well, I can read you this. So the Atlanta Braves put out something very close to what could be their opening day lineup yesterday against the Minnesota Twins. And even though the Braves offense struggled yesterday, Chris Sale had another good outing. And this time, I wish I knew where this was from so I could give a proper accreditation.
Just say it's an AP report.
But
it'll work.
AP report. There we go. So this time it was the top prospect, Drake Baldwin, behind the plate. Now that starting catcher Sean Murphy will miss the rest of the season with a rib injury.
I say that because most likely someone from the AP has used that and just reported it out
there
and taken
go.
It. Could have been Dave O'Brien, Gabe Burns, Justin Cascano, any of our great Braves.
Like reading things great, and not giving.
Rating you know, things. Yeah, well.
Attributing it to somebody.
Well, yeah. Reeve Fiennes would be proud
it's
of
not,
you.
It's
look, Chris Sale had a phenomenal
officially
outing.
Gone off the rails
He's been
here.
Really good. He's been really good so far in the spring. But to your point, to give up, to go four innings and only give up one walk and have four strikeouts, that's great. But the most important thing was that Drake Baldwin behind the plate, Tiff, and he's probably going to be the starter to start the season with the broken rib of Sean Murphy. And when Sell was asked about Baldwin, he said that their work together was great.
There you go.
So that is what you want a veteran like Chris Sell, a competitor like Chris Sell, a guy that's very emotional and he's charged up when he's on the mound and everything. He's like kind of like I am when we iRace, Mike, where everything little thing goes one way, overly excited, overly mad.
Yeah.
That's the competitor he is. For him to say that about the first outing with Drake Baldwin, I think that's great.
Well, I think it's good too. And my question moving forward is, we got a little over 3 weeks until 3 weeks and a day, right? I believe until opening day. And obviously you're going to get everybody through your rotation. We're going to have questions about who that rotation will be. Are we at a point where after last night and after knowing the news about Sean Murphy that we should be paying attention more? If we have questions about who's going to be in the rotation, should we be watching who Drake Baldwin catches for the next 3 weeks? Will that give us an indicator of who is going to be in that starting five, starting six through the first month of the season?
No,
I think it's getting him work in general.
Yeah, I want to get him. Want to get him accustomed to the guys he actually will be catching.
I tend to think you'll just give him as much work as possible without overworking him.
Sure.
You want to give him time. Obviously, there are split squad situations as well. But, no, I don't think that as much as just getting him work. I think just getting him familiar with catching major league pitchers. Yeah, there might be a few guys
you definitely want
that
to
are more
him
important.
With Lopez.
But at that same light, though, he's not going to catch everybody either. So Chadwick Tromp still has to. Now, I think Tromp has a good enough rapport with the guys that are here, the guys that he, from, at least from last year's staff. So maybe you'll work, you know, maybe with Schwellenbach, Cell, Lopez, the three guys you absolutely know will be that guy. Maybe even Strider, when you use him or when you let him have a bullpen session or however that his usage is going, because we know he won't be back till probably May or maybe late April. Yeah. I think, yeah, there, maybe, yeah.
If Sean Murphy was healthy, you would probably be pairing Chadwick Tromp with one of the five guys, right? I think that kind of stays status quo. And I think that whoever Chadwick Tromp was going to be paired with in this rotation, whoever, you know, he was going to be their guy, and we don't know who that is. I mean, we've talked about Bryce Elder, Ian Anderson, all these other names on the back end of the rotation. Whoever that is, I think that stays status quo. And I think that whoever it is that you're going to be plugging in at, you know, 5, 6, 7 in terms of this rotation, like, you're not going to put Drake Baldwin with, like, you know, make sure he gets in with Hector Neris at this point, a non-roster invitee. Like, I think we should be focusing
on
whoever
Hector
it is.
Neris.
I'm not. I'm just saying I don't think Drake Baldwin needs reps with him.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree. You know who else, though? Maybe some of the bigger names in the bullpen. Maybe I want him working with some of those guys, because late game situations, I want that rapport. I want you to know what a guy likes. But also, these guys, look, they're talking, they're hanging out. It's not like Drake Baldwin was thrust into the fire and he has no help. It's not like after every half inning he doesn't come in there, he can't talk to who he's pitching to, or he doesn't have, you know, the pitching coach that's helping him. I just think it's about calling the game. And the number one thing for me, I'm not a baseball guru. I'm not Grant McCauley or Austin Dillon. But what I am is I'm a guy, I've learned enough from people telling you, is that those guys are going to, you don't think Chris Sale's not going to come to the dugout, don't ever call that pitch again. It reminds me of the story.
I don't know if he'll be that blunt, but yes, he'll probably deliver that message.
Chris Sale would absolutely be that blunt.
Hey, man, don't ever do that again.
Well, would you think Greg Maddux would be? Now you would, but not the Greg Maddux you saw on the mound back then. Greg Maddux, it was a story where Greg Maddux was, I think it was Javi was catching him one time, and something happened, and he walked and said, don't ever call that pitch again. Don't ever do that. And because Greg Maddux would be a guy who would throw you a pitch in like May to set you up for October, because he was thinking ahead. He's like, he literally walked off the mound one time, he told Javi, he goes, I threw that pitch because now he's going to expect that pitch when it really matters.
Yeah, I think. But did you also see the one where Greg Maddux talking about how he called his pitches beforehand with one of his body motions, like with how he took the ball out of his glove or where he scratched his neck or whatever? He'd be telling the catcher what he wanted next time around. Like that to me is more Greg Maddux like.
Well, I'm telling you, Greg Maddux would get after you if you did something. He was that old. He was a competitor too. He's also a practical joker, pretty bad. Some disgusting practical jokes. I mean,
stuff that would not fly nowadays that did 30 years ago.
Stuff I wouldn't do in Life of Squid, I'll tell you that much. Baron Burton's W Sauce Fireshire, Bloody Mary Mix, just called the Mary Mix, and our friends at New Round Brewing, Owl Inn Lager, the official lager and beer of Kennesaw State Athletics.
Beltline Brewery, don't have to choose. Go to New Round.
You do it all in one. It's a one-stop shop, baby. You know, I'm in here just hammering my sponsors, even though there's false accusations flying at me from both sides of the table. And here's ridiculousness going on with you two. I will
not
stand for it.
You want to get to your Life of Squid? I mean, I just thought.
I do. I mean, like,
what?
Like a little John Fricky for you. So the Dallas Mavericks trade Luka at the trade deadline, right before, right? The Saturday night before. And they get Anthony Davis, who promptly plays like a quarter and a half before he gets hurt. Haven't seen him since. Don't know where we'll hear from him again. Kyrie Irving is playing, what was it, day-day? I think it was Monday night. And tweaks his knee, comes back, shoots the free throws, goes out. It's announced yesterday he's torn his ACL. Out for the season. So the Maverick, Nico, is it Harris or Harrison? Harris. Nico Harris, it's not a good.
Oh, no, your story.
The GM.
Well, I wasn't asking you. I was asking Day-Day. Okay. He answered me. Nico Harris, not have been a good tenure right now. Not a good month for him. But how bad.
The timing.
Are the optics of the timing, yes, that not only did you hear that, but then the Mavericks decide that they're going to increase the ticket renewal price for season tickets by 8%. 8%. And they do that. They say, look, the average overall price increase will be 8.61%, according to a press release from the Mavericks. The increases reflect ongoing investments in team and fan engagement, is what the team said in a statement. Mm. In the team. You traded your best player. I don't care if he was a doughboy or not. You traded him. I don't care if he maybe had a beer drinking problem or not. Beer drinkers can play hoops too. You traded him. And then you trade him for a guy who's often injured, who promptly gets injured.
Yeah.
And then you send this press release the morning after your now star player goes down. And hours later, it's out that he's torn his ACL and he's out.
It's
is
not a good
this
time
the
right
worst
now.
Month of the in the history of the Dallas Mavericks? And would this happen if Mark Cuban was still running the ship? Because I don't care what you think of Mark Cuban.
He's still running the ship, though.
No, he's not.
I
mean,
I know he's not the majority owner, but are we trying to act like he doesn't have any input?
He's not. He's based on the percentage of what, yeah. Of ownership. Like,
yeah, I know,
out,
but like that, like that's just like
no. He
what
openly
about?
He openly said he did not agree with the Luka trade. Yeah. I tell you one thing.
I tell you this much. He was on camera a week ago telling somebody in the crowd to sit down.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's still going to be bossy and boisterous because that's who he is. I mean, he's a billionaire.
Franchise. They won a championship with him.
I fully believe that he's still got a lot of input on the ticket prices
even
for the Dallas Mavericks.
I might.
I might as well quit the show. Day-Day just needs to be the third microphone in here. Y'all look past me on all these topics. Just look through the window the entire time.
No,
like every time, I'm like, "What? I might as well sit over here. Let me move my microphone in front of Day-Day.
So now the morning shift with Bo Morgan, Tiffany Johnson, and introducing Damien. Day-Day, the Dragon,
the Rhyme
Fire,
Dragon.
Rhyme Dragon Lewis. A full name dropped your brother. I hope you're okay with that. Yeah, you're right. Can we just get Day-Day in here?
Worried about disrespecting him, even though you won't ever worry about Dylon. You never worry about disrespecting Dylon.
I worry about Dylon.
So much shade at him.
No, because he's a youth.
Look, they do say respect your elders.
Oh.
And Day-Day is the elder statesman of this show. Not at the station, but overall in age. So
could be at the station.
No, on this show I am.
No,
he's saying the station.
No. Carl Dukes and Mike Conti are the OGs this radio station.
I just mean age-wise.
Oh, age-wise, no. Carl and Mike are older than Carl Dukes and Mike Bell are both older than
long in the
Day-Day.
Tooth. That's there's right. A few around here.
I mean, John Fricke was John Fricke.
He's like, slow down, bro. Don't put me in the grave yet.
John Fricke was around for the first Roosevelt presidency.
All right. That's going to do it for us here on the morning shift. Steakhouse is next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.